the J-Talk Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. Ben Maxwell and Sam Robson with you. And Sam, if any further proof were needed, the weekend's J1 match day 32 just to reinforce the fact that J1 is the craziest, I repeat, the craziest league in the world.
It's right up there, and I'm quite glad I'm over here in England because the angry mob coming for us from Yokohama supporters who we might have jinxed on their way to the title can just go and focus on you, so make sure you're safe, Ben.
Yeah, remarkable stuff at both ends of the table in Saturday's J1 match day 32. Sam, I almost led off the episode with a hey dad, but I'm not sure how many people were actually across that interesting interaction on Twitter between Neil Debnam and Barry Velder. So, yeah, that reference probably would have escaped far too many people for me to have made it off the top. But, it's interesting that our secret's finally out.
Yeah, it is. And that episode as well, that was lost to the ethers as well. I don't know if you've still got that in the back catalogue, but I think it's best it doesn't make a public display.
No, yes. So, a bit of an interesting tangent to start off the episode. But, hi to Barry and to Neil, if you are listening. We were expecting a title party for Yokohama F Marinos in Saturday's round of matches. But, as we'll come on to later, Gunba Osaka played Party Poopers and Kawasaki Frontale won to keep the title race going. For at least until Wednesday evening. And that means that the floor is clear for us to talk about one of the biggest upsets in the J-League in recent memory. It is Kofu's journey to the Emperor's Cup final. And joining us to talk about that and to help us preview Sunday's final, where Kofu will take on Sanfrecce Hiroshima, it's James Taylor, the breakout star from this year's J-Talk Extra Time podcast. James, welcome to the Big Pod. How are you?
Hi, thanks for having me on. I'm all right, thank you. Bit nervous, but we'll get through it, I think.
Well, yeah, it's absolutely terrific to have you with us, James. To help us make sense of this epic journey for Vinfore Kofu, the J2 strugglers, who could technically have still been relegated entering the weekend's J2 action, but they find themselves, yes, in this showpiece occasion on Sunday. They will take on Hiroshima for the right to lift the Emperor's Cup. And, can you break it down for us, James? How have they managed to do it? It's, as I said, it's just been an epic run for them.
Yeah, well, I'm not really sure how they managed to do it. It's been a really strange season because in the league, like you said, up until the last weekend, they were in danger. Not slim danger, but they were still in the relegation, not quite in the dogfight, but they were on the fringes of it. And they've been really, really poor in the league. And they won four in a row in April. And since then, they've not won successive matches all year in the league, with one win in each of March, May, June, July and August, which is crazy. They've gradually been slipping down the league. They had three draws and then they've just had seven losses in a row, I think now. Mm. But at the same time, they've been seeing off J1 teams in the cup. They beat Sapporo, Tosu and Fukuoka and now Kashima as well. So I'm not sure I can help you make sense of it, but I can definitely talk about it.
Have they been particularly prioritised in the Emperor's Cup at all, and that's led to poor performances in the league, or is this run come completely out of nowhere this season?
But to be honest, I think it's come out of nowhere, because the last few years they've been pretty strong in the league. Since they got relegated, I think they finished 9th, 5th, 4th and 3rd. And then last year, in the winter, they changed the manager, because Akira Ito left, and he went to Iwata, didn't he? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they brought in Tatsuma Yoshida, who I don't know much about him, and we haven't really talked about Kofu much on Extra Time because they haven't done much. They've been mid table for much of the year, and it seemed like they were being kept afloat by drawing a lot of games, which put them in a category like with Tokushima, who've got a record breaking number of draws, and Oita. Who those two are both up in the playoff spots, but or on the fringes of the playoffs, but Kofu just been doing nothing, and I don't know if they've been prioritizing the cup or if they it's just been one of those things where those nights seem to click for them, but they've been really strange in the league. And I was going to say they've been dreadful, but they haven't been dreadful for much of the year. They've just been a bit nothingy. And over the last 6 weeks, they've been poor.
Yeah, it's a crazy run. I mean, you're right. They've lost their last seven in J2, and they haven't won in 11 games. But so, yeah, I mean, after they beat to Sapporo in the third round of the Emperor's Cup, James, did they suddenly switch their focus and decided they wanted to be in the ACL in 2023, and that was going to be all guns blazing for the Emperor's Cup? Because that's it looks like the players are definitely getting up for these fixtures much more than they are in the league anyway. So yeah, it was they beat Sapporo in the third round, Tosu in the round of 16, and then Fukuoka in the quarters before taking without question the biggest scalp of all in this run. And they've beaten Kashima last Wednesday, and we should say on Kashima's patch as well at the Kashima Soccer Stadium, a 1-0 victory thanks to Jumma Miyazaki's excellent goal 8 minutes before half time. So they were, as we said, they were mathematically in with the possibility of being relegated heading into Sunday's game against Okayama. The fact that they lost that, they still escaped the spectre of relegation because the other results went for them below them. But let's go on and talk about Wednesday then, because they could have been excused for having massive stage fright playing the most successful club in J League history. There's no question that that title rests with Kashima, with all of their league titles, their Levain/Nabisco Cups, and of course their Emperor's Cup titles as well. But for Kofu, I guess with nothing to lose, James, and they've reached this stage. No one was giving them any sort of a chance in hell of making it through to the final. So they went there and just put in their best performance. And on this night, it was good enough to beat a Kashima team that has been very wobbly in the league.
Yeah, definitely nothing to lose. And they really went for it, didn't they? I think they've been putting out a strong team in each round. But I don't think they've been putting out a particularly different team in the league. I think it's just the league's been weird. But they were really impressive on Wednesday. I think it seemed to me that they came out quite early to be quite aggressive. And there was some Kashima players were not too happy about that. I did notice that I think in about the first minute, Yuma Suzuki went down clutching his face, which I'm sure a lot of people appreciated, because I know he's got a lot of fans, isn't the word, is it? Anyway, let's move on from that. But I think what really impressed me with this was the defensive effort from Kofu, because particularly in the second half, it seemed like Kashima were pretty much camping out in their half, but they didn't really produce any chances of note until right at the end, when there was a couple of good saves from Kohei Kawata. But there were a lot of blocked shots or Kofu heads were first to crosses and things like that. So it was a really good effort from the defence as a group. But also there was Miyazaki's goal, I thought. I think it was a bit embarrassing for Kashima, to be honest, because that was a really simple ball over the top and he beat the offside trap and rounded the keeper. But a little bit before that, Kazushi Mitsuhira had a goal disallowed for offside, which was it was similar in a way, because there was a pass that went between two Kashima defenders and Mitsuhira was just inside the area. The defenders fell over each other trying to chase him and they looked a bit silly. But I think They were just really up for it, weren't they? And they deserved the win, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I was planning. Obviously, Sam, we were expecting the title to be won over the weekend. So how much we were going to be leading the episode with an in-depth review of the Emperor's Cup semi-finals, but I definitely wanted to talk about things from the Kashima perspective and how frustrated their supporters must be at yet another limp display after their recent struggles in the league. And here with a perfect chance. Okay, well, they had everything to lose, but a perfect chance to make it through to yet another Emperor's Cup final. And they were simply outworked and not good enough on the night to beat the team who came in 18th in J2.
Yeah, well, I think frustrated is the word you say for about the supporters, but the entire club seems frustrated at the moment. Iwamasa, the amount of times he's argued with opposition players or his own supporters, or there's just general arguments that go on around Kashima. They get easily wound up. It was like the first minute here, but like the way that Kofu just sat in, and Kashima play with this 4-4-2 diamond. They don't really use the wings at all, except for when Suzuki pulls out. So Kofu played that perfectly, just kept it in the middle, and they were very comfortable for large parts of this game until at the end. And yeah, Kashima, they've got this weak defence. It didn't take a lot to get through them. It's a simple ball over the top. Sekigawa completely caught out. It was really poor, I think, from him. And Kofu did really well. They took their chance. And generally frustrated, Kashima defended solidly, very few chances, and yeah, they played them really well. It's just another link display from Kashima. I know that in the league now it's 1-9. I think in all competitions it's 2-11. The only games that they have won, they won that Kobe game in the quarterfinal, and then a really poor victory it was in the end against Avispa. But they've just looked lifeless ever since Iwamasa has come in. It's not really worked. I know there's reports that he's going to get a contract extension. I'm not sure on what basis that is from, but yeah, there's a lot of things that aren't right there. And this kind of was kind of coming for Kashima with the way that they've played this season. And Kofu, credit to them, they were on hand to take advantage.
Yeah, absolutely. No question about that. A fully deserved victory for Kofu. And yes, through to, well, it goes without saying, their first ever Emperor's Cup final. They're the first team from the second tier to make it through to the final of this competition since Montedio Yamagata back in 2014. And they look to become just the second tier team to ever win the competition after FC Tokyo beat Kyoto 4-2 in the 2011 final, which was played on New Year's Day 2012. But to this point in the competition's history, that final, Tokyo beating Kyoto, was the only time ever that two second tier teams have met in the final. So let's have a chat about the other semi-final before we talk about the previewing the final, Sam. So Kyoto were looking to make it back to the final, yes, for the first time since 2011. And, they took it to extra time against Hiroshima at the Sanga Stadium. They were a little bit hard done to with the penalty that led to Hiroshima taking the lead 5 minutes before half time, Sam. But a great goal from Orygbajo Ismaila 10 minutes from time took it to extras, but unfortunately for Kyoto and fortunately for Hiroshima, of course, Nassim Ben Khalifa was the beneficiary of a lovely backheel assist from Ezekiel 5 minutes into extra time, and that was enough to send Sanfrecce through to the final. But this week in VAR, should we break it out at the start of the episode, Sam? Because Kyoto were definitely penalised harshly and, well, frankly, wrongly for that handball just before the break. This week in VAR. This week in VAR. This week.
I thought it was a horrible decision. Cross comes in, it hits Mendes on his body and then onto his hand. The rules state that is not a handball. I don't know what VAR is doing. They don't obviously understand the rules. And it was a really harsh penalty. And it's gone against Kyoto. I thought, really poor decision. And Kyoto, I thought, battled so well in this game, considering they had rotated almost all of their team because surviving relegation is their priority. I'm not going to have a go at them like I did at Avispa, who had no reason to rest in the Levain Cup. They battled really well. Hiroshima were generally, I think, the better team. They had the better chances, but Kyoto were always dangerous on the counter-attack. They just maybe on occasion didn't have the quality in front of goal. I remember there was a Miyayoshi one where he had won possession. There was a 1-2 with Paulinho, but wasted that chance. And they wasted a few more. I think Utaka had one into the side netting later on. So, they just didn't have the quality, I don't think, to take advantage of their chances. And Hiroshima had that little bit in extra time. That back heel was superb. And, it was a great finish from Ben Khalifa. So, harsh on Kyoto for the way they battled and that refereeing decision. But in the end, I think Hiroshima's quality just about shone through in extra time.
Yeah, fair enough then. So, James, a bit of a shame. You've obviously just a year removed from, watching Kyoto very closely. Now they're, of course, up in the top flight. But, I'm sure you would have liked a reunion with them, and that would have been, another fairy tale final, wouldn't it? Kofu versus Kyoto. That would have been, pretty epic. And obviously the bookmakers, you could have got a million to one for that sort of final at the start of the competition. But as we segue on to the final then, what can Kofu do to cause Hiroshima trouble, James? Hiroshima have obviously been terrific in J1 for the majority of this season and sit third in the table. But once again, Kofu can rock up knowing they're nobody's expecting them to win, and they literally have nothing to lose. So, how will they go about beating such a strong team like Sanfrecce Hiroshima in the final, do you think?
Good question. I don't know. I think they'll probably do or try and do what they did against Kashima, which would be to get in Hiroshima's faces early and try and catch them off guard, which worked. It worked the other day. And then hold on. They've got to put in the same kind of collective defensive effort that they did against Kashima, which they have not done much in the league this year. But we know they can do it because they did it the other day, and they know they can do it. So I think they'll have some confidence going in. And like you said, nothing to lose. They know they're the underdogs. So the pressure's not on them at all. Pressure will be on Hiroshima. So if they can get at Hiroshima early, you know, kind of classic cup final tactics, then that will increase the pressure. So I guess that they'll do much the same as they did the other night.
Is there anyone that has particularly shone maybe in this cup run or in the league that you think Hiroshima should be worried about, and that maybe Kofu, they might have to deal with a bit of pressure, but is there anyone like on the counter attack that you think, that is probably the main outlet for Kofu?
Well, in the first half of the season, the midfielder Motoki Hasegawa particularly stood out. He was one of the best attacking midfielders in J2. And I think in the second half of the season, he's not stood out as much. But Yoshiki Torikai, another midfielder, has come to the fore and has scored some pretty good goals and been playing pretty well. Plus, someone that you can't help but notice is Kazushi Mitsuhiro with his massive hair. It's a sight to behold. It really is magnificent. He scored some pretty decent goals, and that the one that was disallowed for offside against Kashima was well taken as well. And then to watch out for is Willian Lira off the bench. He's a very good striker with a good eye for goal. And I think if anyone's going to do it, it will be one of those guys.
All right, thanks, James. Yeah, I mean, it's a fascinating game in prospect, and obviously there'll be a lot of neutrals, a lot of casual observers of the J-League tuning in for this game especially. It's obviously, it goes without saying, one of the showpiece events on the Japanese footballing calendar. So, Kofu, they're obviously not going anywhere this season. They're whether they had designs on the playoffs or not at the start of the season, those are long vanished, of course. And this is, all they have left to play for. They know after Sunday's round of games that, relegation is not a possibility anymore. So they can go and, hopefully fully enjoy the occasion put on, hopefully for all neutrals and all people who want to see an entertaining game, put on their best display. So, Sam, I don't know. Well, obviously it's impossible to, from our perspective, to tip against Hiroshima. They've got one of our favourites, our favourite players of the season in Makoto Mitsuda, hopefully fit and raring to go. And as we said earlier, they've been absolutely terrific for, basically the first six rounds of the season aside, they've been absolutely sensational and third in the table on merit. And now they're going for the first leg of what they hope will be a cup double on Sunday with the Levain Cup final to follow the following Saturday, the 22nd. So, as we look forward to this game from a big pod, an inverted commas perspective, what are you expecting from Hiroshima after, they'll have to bounce back now, of course, after fielding a second string team against Kobe on Saturday and getting beaten 4-0.
Yeah, maybe that game affects them. I don't think it will do. I think they've definitely had their eyes on these two cup finals. If they can come away with a cup double, I mean, what a season it will have been. It's already been a terrific turnaround from them. So, yeah, I think they're fully focused on this game. I think they'll know it's going to be a challenge. Not only have Kofu come through a few J1 teams, but Hiroshima, in terms of when they've struggled this season, yes, they've been beaten by Yokohama and Kawasaki. And, yeah, those games, I think they just put their hands up and say the better team beat them. But the other times that they've struggled under Skiba, teams like Kyoto, who've got a draw in midweek, and it was a draw in the league. They also drew with Shonan Bellmare as well, who are teams that are just really well organised. They're going to sit in a little bit deep, but they're not going to be passive in their defence. They're not just going to allow Hiroshima onto them. They'll come on and press high, try and win the ball and be very proactive in that. And if Kofu can do that, as they did against Kashima, that is a way that they can cause Hiroshima problems. But I just think Hiroshima are just so well drilled themselves. They've got such good players in Mr. Morishima. They've got that wide threat from be it Kashiwa and maybe Fuji if he's fit, or whoever they play on that right hand side. So I think there are just a few more options for Hiroshima that they'll eventually break Kofu down. But I do expect Kofu to make a good game of it, and I think they'll stick in it for a while, but it's just whether they can take any of their chances on the break. So yeah, I do strongly expect Hiroshima to win, but I'm not going to rule Kofu out. I think they've shown in their run so far that they are a match for J1 teams, even if their J2 position doesn't suggest it. So hopefully we're in for a really exciting game. And I know we're for Hiroshima on this pod as a J1 pod, but Kofu in the ACL would be absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, it would be a logistical nightmare, wouldn't it, James? We've never had to cross that bridge, of course, because Tokyo won the Empress Cup on New Year's Day in 2012, after they'd already been promoted back to J1. So there you go, Victor. There's another FC Tokyo reference early on in the episode. The prospect of juggling a full 42-game J2 season plus ACL commitments, James, I mean, it shapes as a logistical nightmare, it goes without saying, but it's one that Kofu will very, very, very happily deal with, I'm sure, in 2023, if they're able to do it on Sunday. I'm sure the romantic in you is hoping that they can do it, and fingers crossed. All of the Extra Time Nation will be pulling for Kofu, I'm certain. Let's be honest, what sort of a realistic chance do you give them? They've beaten some J1 teams to make it through to this showpiece event. There's no question about that. And Kashima is a huge name, but as Sam spelled out earlier, they're on a very flat run of form. And Hiroshima on their day are, they're literally the third best team in J1 on merit. So what sort of a realistic chance do you give them? And is it all just about doing their defensive duties and hanging in and trying to make their presence felt in the game early doors, and then, just try and nick one and hang on?
Yeah, very slim chance, I think, because, like you said, Hiroshima are the third place team in J1, so although Kofu have beaten J1 teams, they've not beaten anyone that good or in form, as in form as Hiroshima are, excluding their lost the other night with their much changed team. So I think, because it's such a big occasion, but such an in-form, high-flying opponent, I think I can't imagine that Kofu would go out and try to be kind of swashbuckling, because I think they will also be, I said earlier that they have nothing to lose, but they'll still be quite nervous, I think, because how many of them will have played in this kind of fixture before? The Kofu players, not many, I would imagine. So I think they will probably try to keep it tight and nick one, but it's going to be really, really tough. But it would be amazing if they did it, and then it would also be amazing to see their fixture list next year if they get into the ACL.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be it's going to be remarkable. And yeah, as we said, if they make it through, and if they win the game on Sunday, then as I said, they'll happily deal with the headache of getting everything organised next year. So for many reasons, it shapes as a fascinating occasion on Sunday. Yeah, thanks very much for joining us, James, and giving us an insight into how Kofu have made it this far, and what sort of a chance they've got on Sunday. What's on the docket for extra time this week while we've got you here?
We got four games on extra time this week, talking about some of the playoff hopefuls and the promotion hopefuls and the relegation dogfight, which is still in full swing. Very exciting. We've only got two rounds left, but there's still lots to be decided.
Brilliant stuff. And we should give a shout out, of course, to Mike Innes, who planted the seed for this idea of this crossover start to Big Pod this week. So thanks to Mike, and thanks ever so much for joining us, James. You've been doing a sterling job all season long on Extra Time. It's been terrific to have you on board at full time. Sharing in with John, and look forward to hearing a lot more from you going forward.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me, and thanks also for giving us Extra Time, boys, the platform to talk about J2 and J3, because it's great fun.
Outstanding. Well, thanks again to James Taylor. Enjoy the game on Sunday, mate. And we'll hopefully catch up with you again soon. So after a quick hit of music, Sam and I will run through all of the J1 Match Day 32 action. Welcome back, and thanks again to James for his input there in part one. And I hope you're all looking forward to Sunday's Emperor's Cup final. The Yokohama F Marinos Massive were definitely looking forward to the prospects of a title celebration at the Nissan Stadium on Saturday afternoon. The giant serving platter was on display before the game as F Marinos welcomed then second from bottom Gunma Osaka to the Nissan Stadium. But I don't know what it was, Sam, whether it was a stage fright or just a bad day at the office for the J1 leaders. It's happened again. Gumba have won away at the Nissan Stadium, and they've proven to be party poopers.
Yeah, well, Johnny did warn us that Gamba have got quite a good record against Marinos, and they've pulled out a surprising victory, let's say. I think they got battered for most of the game. All the possession was Marinos's. They had most of the chances, and they've really got undone Marinos by two really lapses in concentration at the back. Just set pieces come in, they clear it first off, but then don't get out properly and leave players at the back. The first goal, Anderson Lopez decides to step up, but Eduardo doesn't. That leaves Alano free, and the second one, Patrick was left at the back post because, again, they didn't step out properly. So pretty poor defensively from F Marinos, but they had nothing really to worry about in terms of the way they played. They were still very much in control of this game, but it was just kind of one of those days for them, and maybe the J-Talk jinx has provided a victory for Gamba.
Well, we're all fans of the title race here, and I guess as long as it can continue, that makes us all the happier, doesn't it, Sam? So, they've definitely upset the apple cart, Gumba. There are more than 32,000 rocked up to the Nissan Stadium, and, obviously the large majority of them hoping for a title party. But, in his post-match interview with DAZN, Kevin Muscat uttered the phrase, "It just wasn't meant to be," a couple of times, and, I guess that's the only way that he can justify the performance, because they dominated the majority of the chances, the possession as they want to do, especially on their own patch, of course. But they just couldn't manage to find a way past Masaki Higashiguchi and his defence. Kota Mizunuma had a couple of first half chances. The first he shot too close to Higashiguchi from on the edge of the 6-yard box, actually, in just the second minute. But then the first lapse from F Marinos came 6 minutes after that, and Juan Alano glanced in a header from close range after Dawan got a run on a corner and headed back into the danger zone. The majority of the chances, as you said, Sam, another one from Mizunuma 7 minutes before the break that was blocked on the line by a combination of Higashiguchi and Keisuke Kurokawa, who was back to cover on his goal line. And, is that what you think Muscat's just going to tell the the players after the game and as they prepare for Wednesday night's home game against Iwata, when they'll have another crack at trying to win the league. It was just one of those nights, and they can just shake it off and hopefully for them go again.
Yeah, I think absolutely. The way they controlled the game, the amount of chances they created, any other game, they'd probably win that one. It was just against a very good goalkeeper. Some really good defending, last-ditch defending, Kurokawa, as you mentioned there. But generally, the entire Gamba defence was much more organised than it usually is. There were bodies on the line, obviously, they were fighting for their lives and did that really well. But yeah, Marinos, if they turn up and play exactly the same way in midweek against Iwata, I imagine they'll go on and win. I don't think they can put it down as a poor performance. Cut out the errors at the back, because they were preventable goals, and they'll work on that. But generally speaking, the way the game went, 9 times out of 10, they win that game. So no, nothing to panic about just yet. But yeah, I mean, if the same happens in midweek, then maybe we have a bit of concern.
Indeed. So, we can't let this slip without giving Gumba their praise, and we definitely want to do that. They've in some respects, all they've done is hold serve, because a number of their relegation dogfight rivals also tasted victory on Saturday, Sam. But this is obviously a priceless 3 points in their final three games. This obviously shaped as by far the hardest on paper. So the fact that their backs were against the wall for large parts of this game, but they were able to score, you know, two good goals. Alano's a fine header, and then Patrick able to chest down and rifle past Yohei Takaoka from 6 yards with 11 minutes left. They've in some respects it's a smash and grab, but it's got to be a massive confidence boost for Gumba after some of their recent performances had not boded well for the remainder of their season. But they return to action after the two cup finals are played, then they can really attack their final two games. And obviously everybody associated with the club hopes that they can do enough to survive for another season in J1.
Yeah, it should be a massive confidence boost. I think it's unfortunate for them that they have to wait so long for the next league game. They can't necessarily take the momentum of this victory into the next game. So that's a negative, I suppose. But yeah, I thought they can take a lot of heart out of the defensive display and the fact that they've managed to score when their chances were presented to them. Because so often this season, there's been lapses in concentration at the back. There's been players that should be playing a lot better, not really switched on. But it looked in this game that everyone was working to one goal. They just, not many teams go up against Marinos away from home and face the amount of possession chances that Marinos had and stay, come out of it with a clean sheet. So they've got to take that positive. It was, it's a smash and grab to a degree, but they defended really well. Mm. Yes, you're going to concede a couple of chances, but it wasn't like Higashiguchi was stretched too often. Yeah, we mentioned a few there, but it wasn't like chance after chance was just being incredible save after incredible save and him bailing them out. They were generally kept Marinos to a reasonable distance. A lot of the chances were maybe more from distance or block shots, so it wasn't like they were under constant siege throughout the game. So yeah, I think they played really well, and they have to try and take that on to the next couple of games. And it was just a shame again for them this weekend that everyone around them seemed to win, so they didn't even get out of the bottom three. So yeah, not great circumstances necessarily around the victory, but yeah, a priceless 3 points for them.
Yes, no question about that. And we should say that F. Marinos did have the ball in the net inside the last 5 minutes. That was after Joel Fujita had hit the post from inside the D in the 87th minute. An almighty scramble ensued inside the Gumba 6-yard box. And the ball was finally bundled home. But unfortunately for the leaders, Leo Ciara was offside when Fujita let fly. And that negated the later sequence of events that saw the ball in the net. So 2-0 to Gumba, it finished then. And this was one of three huge games on the slate that involved teams currently in the top three in the table, and indeed their opponents were relegation dogfighters. So from the Nissan Stadium next, we'll go to Todoroki, where Naoya Kanai was able to make his first appearance at the ground in 3 years to watch his beloved Frontale, and that must have been absolutely terrific for Naoya. One of our patrons from our Patreon-only line group contributes a lot to the chat in there. And it's terrific for him to be able to, yeah, return to Japan from California and get to a game at Todoroki. And, well, Sam, he saw an absolute epic, didn't he? And, yeah, Frontale obviously knew that if events went against them at the Nissan Stadium and they failed to beat Shimizu, then, yes, the title would be gone and their faint hopes for a third straight J1 title would be extinguished. And, well, there were times in their game against Shimizu where it looked for all the world that they might be dead and buried themselves, Frontale, but they were able to dig themselves out of a 2-1 hole, and a quick burst with about 15 minutes left saw them triumph over Shimizu, who have definitely got the wobbles and find themselves down back down in the bottom three at the end of match day 32.
Yeah, this was a wild game. I think Kawasaki were just happy that Shimizu were just as chaotic as them at the moment, because Kawasaki started really well. They got in front, and then Shimizu seemed to click into gear when they're behind in games. So they came out, and they were very good up until taking the lead. Then they panicked completely, and it went back and forth, back and forth. It was an absolutely insane game, really. Kawasaki, the first goal is fantastic. The strike from Tunnel into the bottom corner, and then Shimizu had to deal with Gonda, who was injured for a large part of this first half. I think he first got into a collision with Taniguchi that seemed to knock him on the hip, and then he wasn't right after that. There were a couple of kicks that he did which he probably shouldn't have been taking, and that almost led to a 2-0 for Kawasaki. I think Wakizaka had a glorious chance right in front of goal and put it wide. But yeah, he went off then, so that's a worry for the Japan national team. But after the break, then Shimizu were right on it. I thought their front four, whatever combination that they have, it really does combine well. Carlinhos has come into it in this second half of the season, and yeah, they then looked good going on and then taking the lead. But it was a seesaw game. You couldn't really get your head around it, and it just kind of summed up both teams in the last few weeks, I think.
Yeah, it was a mad game, helter skelter, no question about that. And you're right to praise Tono for his superb strike to give Frontale their first lead of the game in the 28th minute. But yeah, it looked like Wakizaka's miss in first half stoppage time was going to be costly. I mean, for a player as usually as composed as he is, to miss the target quite badly after Gonda had given away possession was it looked like it might have proven costly, as you say, after Shimizu started the second half all guns are blazing. And Ryohei Shirasaki equalized 4 minutes after the break after a terrific surge down the left and cut back into the box by Carlinhos, who, as you said, Sam, has really picked up his game in the second half of the season. And Carlinhos got the second for S-Pulse in the 57th minute when he side-footed home a driven ball across the box from one of our new favourites, Rion Yamahara. But from there, it was a case of could Shimizu hold on? And as we've seen in recent weeks, that certainly has not been their strong point. And so it proved again. And a typical Frontale burst of two goals in 3 minutes ultimately did for S-Pulse. And as we said, sent them back down to 17th place in the table. First, the forgotten man, Kazuya Yamamura, headed in the 76th minute. He was basically the only one who rose in the box for that corner, wasn't he, Sam? And yes, he met Yasuda Wakizaka's delivery, and his header arced over the S-Pulse sub-keeper, Takuo Okubo, and into the top corner. And then Yu Kobayashi improvised a volley from close range after Marcinho had volleyed a cross back across the six-yard box. And that proved to be it. Although, it was a glorious moment for just a second for Pikachu. He had the 100,000 volts in full effect in the 86th minute. He headed in for what we all hoped was going to be his first J1 goal. But, of course, wouldn't you know it, the poor old fella couldn't hold his run. And he was marginally offside when the ball was, volleyed across the box. And, unfortunately for him and for S-Pulse, the goal was ruled out, and Frontale hung on to their 3-2 victory that saw them close the gap back to 5 points to F Marinos after their defeat at the Nissan Stadium. Both of the top two still have three games to play, and as we'll come on to later, their next appearances will be on Wednesday night when they play their final game in hand on a number of the teams around them. As we'll come on to next, Hiroshima were officially eliminated from title contention with their loss to Kobe. So it's a race in two, and it's still obviously very heavily weighted in F. Marinos' favour with a 5-point cushion with nine to play for. But, we'll find out, Sam, if this is properly a wobble or not, won't we, when F. Marinos host rock bottom Iwata on Wednesday night. If they can't beat them, then we might have to call in the witch doctors. But otherwise you'd expect they would take care of business. And Frontale are at home against another dogfighter in Kyoto, so they've certainly shown they're up for a scrap and desperate to hang on to their J1 status. So we'll see how those two games pan out on Wednesday. But are you still on the S Pulse bandwagon, Sam, or you hopped back off again? Because they looked like they'd done pretty much all they needed to. They were comfortable in 12th for a number of weeks there, but they're now four without a win, and they've seen themselves sink back down to 17th, albeit with a game in hand against the two teams directly above them, Gamba and Fukuoka. But of course, that game in hand is the Shizuoka Derby against Iwata that will be played on October the 22nd when the form book goes out the window, etc., etc. Cliche alert. So, you've got to be concerned about your S-Pulse boys at the moment.
Yeah, the bandwagon is falling apart a little bit. Running repairs are on it. The only reason I'm still on it is because of that game in hand against Iwata. If you want a game in hand against anyone, it's them, and they're all but down now, aren't they, Iwata? So hopefully for S-Pulse bandwagoners, they can get a victory there. That should take them, especially if Kyoto losing midweek, that could take them up as high as 14th, and then that traffic does help them out. But it's definitely getting a bit ropey. After maybe a month or so ago, I'd have probably said they were safe, but as you know, any prediction on this podcast ultimately becomes completely useless, so that's how it is. But we're all nervous on the bandwagon.
Yes. Well, it's funny you say that about predictions on this podcast, because I've got to eat some crow right about now, because, we were throwing darts last week when you, me and Johnny were trying to guess who was going to end up in the bottom three. And I suggested that Kobe might have won their last game of the season on last week's episode when they'd made it three straight wins, and knowing that they had to come up against Hiroshima on Saturday. But of course, I didn't factor in the fact that Hiroshima would be playing an Emperor's Cup semi-final on Wednesday night, and that would then go to extra time would obviously drain a number of Michael Skibber's first team players. So he turned up to the Nova Stadium to face Kobe on Saturday with to say it's a much changed lineup is a massive understatement. He basically played the Rezies, Sam, and Kobe took advantage of a much changed Hiroshima team. They took advantage of a straight red card for one of the changes to the Sanfrecce lineup, Yuta Imazu. After a 4th-minute incident, he was sent off after a VAR check in the 9th minute, and from there, it did take them a little while to break Hiroshima down, Kobe. Ryuho Kikuchi got the first goal in the 20th minute after a scramble in the box. And then three goals in 3 minutes early in the second half put this game to bed. And Kobe are now the best placed of all of the dogfighters. And 5 weeks ago, we couldn't have imagined that we would have said that sentence, could we?
No, it's been a very good turnaround for Kobe. You have to give them credit for that. I think it's come with Muto getting back fit, Osako getting back fit, and they've kind of found a system that works for the players that they have available. I think Yuruki has stepped up a little bit as well, and generally they look a more solid side at the back. I think Kikuchi, who had a bit of a dodgy start to this season after his injury, I think he's stepped up, and it's been a much improved performance. The fixture here has really helped them. I mean, you, when you look at it, and you were right to think, oh, there could be in trouble here, Kobe, with Hiroshima, Kawasaki, and F. Marinos, three of the last four. But yeah, a rotated, very rotated Hiroshima side that goes down to 10 men inside the first 5 minutes. I mean, it's absolutely ideal for Kobe. So it makes analysing this game quite difficult, because even for the first half, they might have got one goal, Kobe, but Hiroshima were very much in it. They were holding firm at the back. They were creating chances themselves. It was just that burst towards the start of the second half that really took the game away. And you've got to give Kobe credit for that and the way that they really went to Hiroshima. But yeah, it's not the greatest game necessarily to analyse, but perfect for Kobe. Although, again, like Gamba, a lot of the teams around them won, so it's not quite as big a victory as it might have been. But yeah, again, another huge 3 points for them.
Indeed, and another home game on the horizon on Wednesday night when they face the Dogfighter directly below them now at Shonan Bellmare. And they were another Dogfighter to win on Saturday, Shonan. So, yeah, we've just wrapped up the games where the Dogfighters took on the top three teams in the table. And, yeah, two of them came away with epic victories in the Kansai double of Gamba and Kobe. Well, it was, a Kanto derby of sorts when Shonan visited FC Tokyo. And Bellmare completed the double over the Capital Club after a 2-0 win at the Lemon Gas Stadium in the rain that I sat through earlier on in the season. Yeah, Shonan repeated the dose at Ajinomoto Stadium. Though they did leave it late, they scored two terrific goals. Hiroyuki Abe's opener was a stunner from distance with 12 minutes to go. And then 4 minutes later, a simply stunning solo effort from Shuto Machino, who dribbled from 10 to 15 yards inside his own half down the right-hand touchline, cut the ball past a static Masato Morishige, who might be thinking about retiring, I think, after that incident. That was, Machino just completely embarrassed the former Japan international. And after surging into the box, he finished in off Jakub Slovic's right hand, the keeper getting a touch to his shot, but unable to keep it out. So there's been whispers that, Tokyo might still be holding out faint hopes of an ACL bid, Sam. Even the PE teacher mentioned it to me last Friday. He said, you know, what happens if, Hiroshima win the Emperor's Cup? Then there'll be an extra spot available for whoever finishes fourth, et cetera, et cetera. And I just didn't want to entertain the notion. And, all Tokyo supporters were finally put in their place on Saturday afternoon when, they were beaten by the better team. As I said, they left it late, but Shonan had more to play for, and ultimately it showed.
Yeah, it's a pity he didn't whisper to the players that they had a chance, because they didn't play as if they were fighting for an ACL spot. It was one team looked really up for it, and Shonan, the other team, would rather have not been there from why. So I mean, it was pretty passive from Tokyo. I spent the entirety of the first half just shouting, why is Shuto Machino not on the pitch? Because Shonan had lots of possession, but they didn't really have anyone that was going to take their chances. And we saw when he came on, that goal that he scores is absolutely magnificent. He's been dropped for the last three games, and I don't understand it. And I think it might come back to bite them if they don't start using him a bit more. But it worked out for them here. It's a fantastic goal from Abe, first of all, into the top corner, an incredible strike, and then Machino does what he does for that second goal. So they thoroughly deserve that victory. Shonan, just don't let me go through and it's 57 minutes without Machino on the pitch, because I don't know who that's helping.
Yeah, indeed. So, well, yeah, I wondered last week if they'd used up 8.5 of their lives at Shonan. Well, they definitely, preserved whatever lives they've got left on Saturday afternoon, because, it wasn't much of a contest. Tokyo, disappointing performance, and, full credit to Shonan. And, Tokyo have been quite accommodating to teams in the dogfight, haven't they? The double to Fukuoka, who we're going to talk about next, and, the double to Shonan. It's it's just another indication that Tokyo is very much a work in progress. And from this game, the story is very much Shonan's terrific goals to win it, and a fair play to them. That sees them back to 13th. I think they did touch that height on their initial surge out of the drop zone, didn't they, Sam? And they've reached it again with 31 games played. They have 35 points. So, just for reference, they're 3 points above S-Pulse, who have a slightly better goal difference and have played the same number of games. And yeah, it does shape as a huge one, obviously a huge six-pointer on Wednesday night when Shonan visit Kobe. And we'll see how that goes, and that will obviously send one of those teams into the cup break on a bit of a high if indeed there is a winner at the Noivir. So yeah, well done again to Balmari, terrific performance, and fingers crossed for them moving forward. Fukuoka, I've just mentioned, they notched another much-needed victory. They're second in their last three games by coming from behind to beat Sapporo 2-1 up at the Dome. Ryota Aoki gave Consadole a 12th-minute lead, but it's a bit of a pattern in these games on Saturday, Sam. A quick burst of goals were all Fukuoka needed. Firstly, Daiki Miya headed in, and again, he's been credited with the goal, even though anywhere else in the world, unfortunately for the Sapporo keeper, Takanori Sugano, it has to go down as a known goal, as the ball from Mia's header hit the post and then went in off Sugino. But there was no question about the owner of the second goal for Fukuoka just 2 minutes later. Wanma scoring in the 77th minute. And that was enough for Fukuoka to notch another vital 3 points and edge their way out of the drop zone, and they're 15th after 32 rounds of matches. A very important 3 points for them. It goes without saying, Sam. And another dogfighter who was able to reflect on a successful Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, a huge victory for them. But I mean, it kind of came out of nowhere. I think for the first 75 minutes, I thought I could only see Sapporo winning this game. They started so well in that first half. They were creating chances. They were causing so many problems. I mean, Gabriel Xavi, I thought, continued from where he left off against Kawasaki. That first time, that was in the first 30 seconds or so, the ball out to Aoki that Murakami then saved his effort. But that was a sign of things to come. I mean, Daiki Miya, I mean, it was a tale of his bullet headers in that towards that goal. First one saved by his own goalkeeper that Aoki then taps in. Then he managed to bring Avispa back into it. But they didn't really do a lot before that. I mean, I'd love to be sat here saying what a decision it was to start John Mary finally. What a player he was. But he was rubbish. He was terrible. And yeah, I think he had one effort blazed into the stands, but generally did nothing. And then Wanma comes off the bench. It was a complete parallel opposite. The complete polar opposite from Mary in my eyes. But then he just does a wonderful piece of skill through Okamura and then finishes well. So I just don't know what I'm on about. Play Wanma forever. It must be fantastic. But yeah, it was a great burst from Avispa. A huge victory for them to get them psychologically as well out of the relegation zone. And full credit to them. But I still don't really know how they won that game.
Yeah, well, they'll take any points they can get these days. And as we said, it's the two wins in their last three have rescued them from what did look a very, very dire situation. But they're still very much in there scrapping for their lives, Fukuoka. And again, you could see it fully on display at the Sapporo Dome on Saturday afternoon against opponents and their hosts, Consadole, who are still mathematically not safe, are they, Sam? It will take one more win in their three remaining games. They're another one of the teams who have a game in hand to make up on Wednesday, although that is away at Urawa, who, as we'll come on to later, were finally able to get back to winning ways on Saturday themselves. But four of the dogfighters. It was a good Saturday afternoon. As we said, Gamba, Kobe, Shonan and Fukuoka all winning. Obviously, it slightly lessens the impact when so many of them win on the same day. But yes, they couldn't do without the 3 points themselves, each and every one of them. So huge kudos to all of them. And still hanging on are Kyoto Sanga, although, after their 1-1 home draw against Nagoya on Saturday, Sam, they would probably, they'd love to play moments of that game back again. There's no question about that. They fell behind to a Haruya Fuji goal on the stroke of halftime. Rikito Inoue got them back on level terms with half an hour to go and with so much football still to be played in the game. Sanga will just be frustrated that they weren't able to beat Mitch Langerak again. And a lot of it comes down to that the penalty save save by Langerak in the first half. Obviously, if Kyoto had have gotten off to a lead in the game, then, you know, they might have been able to kick on and, put Nagoya away. But unfortunately, Kosuke Takutomi's spot kick was saved. And from there, at the end of the day, Sanga just have to be content with a point.
Yeah, I think they will be content in the end, the way the game panned out. But yeah, that penalty is a huge miss for him. It's a very good save from Langerak. Yes, it's a reasonable height for him, but he anticipates it well and gets down. I think it was weird the way that the penalty came about, because Sato is just clearly taken out and the referee doesn't give it. And then VAR takes, as usual, takes forever. And I'm going, what are they seeing that I'm not? This is as clear a penalty as anything. And finally it was given, so thankfully that was the case. But yeah, maybe that time that it was taken, it maybe settled Takutomi a bit, I'm not sure. But it wasn't the best penalty, but a very good save from Langerak. And then after that, Nagoya played okay. I mean, Mateus, I think, is obviously the main threat. The ball in that he does for the own goal there gives Nagoya the lead is absolutely fantastic. It's so difficult to defend, but Takeda's there. He's fighting with Maruyama. He's kind of more interested in holding on to Maruyama than actually doing his defending, so he's in no position really to defend the ball as it comes to him and goes in. So maybe that was slightly poor, but the response was pretty decent from Kyoto in the second half. They created a couple of chances, got their goal, and in the end I think this was a fair result, and it keeps Kyoto above the relegation places, and they're going to be a difficult game for anyone going into the last three that they've got this season.
Yeah, most definitely. And you're right to point out, of course, another example of the own goal not being given as an own goal. And yeah,
did that not get given?
No, it's Fuji's goal officially, according to the J League. So
I'm baffled. I'm
usually good at picking those up and making a point of pointing them out. But thanks for pulling me up on that one. Haruya Fuji gets his goal bonus, even though anywhere else in the world he wouldn't have done. So fair play to you, Haruya. Enjoy whatever you decide to spend it on. For Kyoto, obviously, they would have loved 3 points at the Sanga Stadium, especially after the disappointment of losing the Emperor's Cup semi-final after extra time on their own patch on Wednesday night. But ultimately, I guess a frustrating week, but they have that point has seen them keep their head above water, and indeed a point clear of Gamba with a game in hand on them. And they're 2 points ahead of second from bottom Shimizu, having played the same number of games at 31. So next, the final dogfighter that we need to chat about this week. And, Sam, we might have seen the death knell, unfortunately, for Jubilo Iwata. And, it came in the 93rd minute of their home clash against Kashima. They were at one stage in this game 3-1 up over the team who came into the match day, obviously fifth in the table, Kashima. But, the three goals for Iwata in the last 15 minutes of the first half included a first of the season for Kenyu Sugimoto, Sam's favourite. And it was from the penalty spot in the fifth minute of first half stoppage time. That was after goals from Yuto Suzuki, everyone's fantasy favourite in the first half of the season, and Shota Kaneko saw them overturn Yuta Higuchi's blast from a distance in the 10th minute that was still rising as it entered the net. Sam, a remarkable strike from, again, one of our favourites, Higuchi. A terrific goal from him, and sent Kashima hopefully on their way. But Iwata turned it around before half time and went into the sheds 3-1 up, and we wondered, is the great escape on? Unfortunately for them, they were brought straight back down to earth 2 minutes into the second half when Eleke scored his first goal for the club in J1. And then unfortunately for Iwata, heartbreak in the 93rd minute, and it was Everaldo who got the equaliser for Antlers to turn 3 points into one for Jubilo, and not quite mathematically relegate them, Sam, but pretty much for all intents and purposes, remove any hope they had of said great escape.
Yeah, I was devastated for them. I think even a win would probably have been too little too late given how the other results went, but I thought they put in a fantastic performance from going 1-0 down. I thought some of the football they played at the end of that first half were, I mean, maybe they should have done it earlier, but I thought it was really good. Uehara, some of the passes he played through were very nice into Suzuki mainly, but also Yamada, who's been injured for almost the entire season, but he linked up really well in that kind of number 10 role behind Sugimoto. I was very worried for Chimbolo when they put Sugimoto forward for that penalty, given the way that his season had gone, but he put it away fantastically, and it was all looking really rosy for Jubilo at half time. But yeah, that goal straight away at the start of the second half puts them under so much pressure, and they had to dig deep, they had to sit back, they had to try and fight for their lives, and eventually Kashima did to Jubilo what Jubilo have done to a lot of teams this season, is that they score late and deny them the 3 points. So yeah, really unfortunate for Jubilo. I think that is pretty much it for their stay in J1. But yeah, congratulations to Kashima on an epic victory, the way they celebrated, getting a 3-3 draw at the bottom of the table. They were running around it like they'd won the World Cup, so congratulations to them on that. But yeah, as you can tell, I've maybe turned the corner on Kashima this season. They usually quite like him, but oh, goodness me, yeah. But anyway, stop with that pettiness. But yeah, unfortunate for Jubilo, but yeah, they gave it a really good go.
No, you could have carried on there, mate. I'm all in favour of that, having to go to Kashima. That's fine. But, act like you've been there before, guys. You do play for the most successful team in the history of the league. But, I guess any point for Kashima is a decent point these days, isn't it? Because they've, as we said, they've been struggling under Daiki Iwamasa. But, really, really unfortunate for Iwata. And it was a situation that they obviously should have been able to deal with, and the goals come about through just failing to deal with a ball into the box, and you just want to get it cleared out for a corner, or try and hook it out for a throw or something, but tried to play for a foul, and kudos to the antlers player for basically lying down on the floor but being able to hook it back to Everaldo, who broke all of the hearts of the Yamaha Stadium faithful on Saturday, right at the death. So, okay, we've got two games to go, Sam. The first of them that we'll cover was at the Saitama Stadium, and it saw Urawa get back to winning ways with a 2-1 victory over Tosu. They were unfortunate to have a goal chalked off early doors for offside. It was an own goal from a Tosu defender, and the replays to me were pretty inconclusive that there was an offside in the build-up. So, Tosu might have gotten away with one there. But, the 5 minutes before the break, Kasper Juncker calmly put Urawa into the lead. And then the 5 minutes after the break, excellent pressure from Yoshio Koizumi saw him win the ball back. And then he finished smartly past Park Il-gyu to put Reds 2-0 up. Taisei Miyashiro halved Tosu's arrears just past the hour, but they were not able to add a second and take a point from this game. So Reds steadied their ship somewhat, and this victory actually saw them move above Tosu in the table. Reds had been ninth for goodness knows how long, but yes, they've finally seen them. They've moved up in the table to eighth, and Tosu have taken their spot in ninth. Two decent goals from Reds, and you can let us know, Sam, whether you thought this was much of an improvement on recent performances, because we had been quite critical about Reds in recent weeks. So good, to at least for their supporters, to see them get back to winning ways.
Yeah, you can never argue with a victory, I suppose. It was a better performance, especially than last week, which was just dreadful. They kind of moved, it was a different approach, I suppose, with Juncker and Lindstrom up front. They weren't relying necessarily on the pressure from the front. They played with, on paper, they're more quality in those two players. And they generally combined pretty well. Juncker obviously got his goal. I thought Okubo's run for that goal is magnificent, the way it gets through a few players. But I thought generally the game was quite sloppy. I think Tosu were the masters of their own downfall, especially with the second goal, the way they kind of tried to give away possession about three or four times before they eventually did. And Koizumi does really well, takes his chance. But Yeah, that wasn't great from Toto. And then Reds defensively were still a bit all over the place. I mean, the goal that they conceded is just a launch ball over Iwanami that doesn't bother to react to it. Miyashiro does good touch and finish. So, yeah, and it was a game, I think, between two teams in mid-table that really weren't that focused on it. And great for Reds to get a victory. But, yeah, there are still various issues that need to be worked out there.
Fair enough then. All right, so there's just the one game left to go then, and it's the other draw from the match day. It was 0-0 at Hitachidai when Kashiwa entertained Cerezo Osaka. Obviously a chance for Cerezo to put some pressure on Sanfrecce in the hunt for third spot, with Hiroshima getting battered at Kobe. Cerezo could have closed to just 2 points behind Sanfrecce had they won at away at Reysol, but it wasn't to be. And 0-0, a typical end of season game, Sam, between two teams that have defied expectations, and we probably had fair rights to hope for a better contest between these two, who we are sitting in the top six. I mean, in some weeks this would qualify as a match of the weekend if it was perhaps in mid season or so, and we weren't so honed in on the relegation dogfight. But you could see that both teams kind of want this season to come to a conclusion as quickly as possible.
Yeah, Reysol especially, they've really stalled the last couple of months. They haven't won since 6th of August against Kyoto. They've kind of run out of steam towards the end of this season. But, I mean, fair play to them for the position that they're going to find themselves in at the end of the season, because they've been magnificent. But I think their race has been run a little bit. They're delighted with where they are and not necessarily going to press on any further. And then Cerezo, I mean, we've spoken about it a lot this season, the amount of injuries they've got, and they're without much of a central midfield in this one. Okano was injured, as well as Kida, and Harakawa's been out for a little while, so I think they dropped in at Kiyotake deep, but yeah, he's not as effective deep as he would be just in his normal position, so they struggle to really create chances and break Kashiwa down. I think they managed to get through once or twice, and there was one where Taggart was just offside, but it was a correct decision. But otherwise, generally speaking, both goalkeepers had very little to do in the game, and it was a 0-0, and there was not much more to say about it.
Indeed. So that's all nine games wrapped up then from the weekend's, well, Saturday's rather, J1 match day 32. Obviously a good week for a number of the dogfighters, coming away with much needed victories. And apart from Iwata, of course, losing 2 points right at the death at home against Kashima. Yeah, their fellow Shizuoka side, Shimizu, were the biggest losers of the match day in terms of the dogfighters. Yeah, coming away with nothing from their trip to Todoroki after having taken the lead and finding themselves back down in 17th. So obviously, we're looking ahead to Sunday's Emperor's Cup final, as we talked about with James in part one. But before then, we have five games in hand for J1 clubs that will be played on a Wednesday night. And just as with Saturday, the J1 title could be won at the Nissan Stadium on Wednesday night when F. Marino's the leaders host bottom club Iwata, and at the same time, Kawasaki, who are second, of course, host 14th placed dogfighter Kyoto. So, if Marinos win and Frontale fail to beat Kyoto, then the trophy, the salad platter, will be raised at the Nissan Stadium. So there are two huge games between the top two and dogfighters. We have a massive relegation six-pointer at the Noivu Stadium, Sam, when Kobe entertain Shonan. I'm obviously not going to make any predictions on that game after writing Kobe off last week and then seeing them come out and beating Hiroshima 4-0. But this is a game that is shaping as a huge one, and it obviously means just as much to Shonan as it does to Kobe. And it's going to be a very, very difficult one to call. I don't know. Do you how much of a chance do you give Shonan of upsetting Vissel after their run of four straight victories?
Well, Shonan have the ability to upset anyone. They're very difficult to beat. They've been in this situation a lot. They know how to grind out points at the end of the season. So, yeah, I think it's very possible that Shonan gets something out of it. Obviously, Kobe have got the momentum. They've got the confidence with them. And I'm trying to work out the maths of it here, but if Kobe win, they go on to 40 points. That takes them 7 points clear of Gamba in 16th with two games to play. So I think, unless I'm missing something completely, which I may well be, but they might be safe at least from automatic relegation with a victory. So it's a massive game, obviously, for both sides. But Kobe could breathe a big sigh of relief if they get the 3 points.
Yeah, I was trying to work that out as well. But even with Sapporo playing away at Reds, a victory for them would lock up their survival finally, no question. But yeah, I wasn't sure about Kobe, and I wasn't going to mention it because I've looked silly on this podcast a couple of times. Well, not just a couple of times, numerous times, of course. But yeah, in recent weeks, for my predictions on Kobe, so I was going to hold fire. But I think you're right, and we'll wait and see after the dust settles on Wednesday night. I've mentioned Reds hosting Sapporo. Urawa could go after rising one spot from ninth to eighth on Saturday. They could get a nosebleed and surge all the way up to seventh if they can beat Sapporo and Cerezo Osaka do them a favour by winning away at FC Tokyo. That's obviously a chance for Cerezo to close to within a point of Sanfrecce in the race for third spot. So we'll wait and see there. Tokyo, for the record, if they were to beat Cerezo, they could rise as high as fifth. But we'll cross that bridge if and when we come to it. And so then, Sam, all we can do is look forward to Wednesday night. And if the salad platter is raised at the Nissan Stadium, we might be back with a special podcast to celebrate F. Marinos's triumph. If not, if Frontale can match their result and send the title race to the final two match days, then I believe patrons can look forward to a written review from you of the five games on Wednesday night.
Yeah, I thought this was done and dusted back in May. I think it was the last midweek round. So, I'll dust off the old typewriter and be ready to go in case the title race isn't wrapped up on Wednesday. So, I'm looking forward to it. Some pivotal games on Wednesday.
Very much our word of the moment, isn't it? Yes. All right, then. So we'll leave it there. And, Sam, look forward to catching up with you after the five games and indeed the Emperor's Cup final, which, promises to be a fascinating affair. And, we'll see what happens on Wednesday first and foremost. But, look forward to catching up with you again next week.
Yeah, look forward to it all. Are we going to have a J2 team in the ACL? That's the big question. So look forward to rounding it up with you next week.
Oh, yes, indeed. All right. Fascinating in prospect, no question. All right. So we'll leave it there. That is it for this week's episode of the J-Talk podcast. Sam and I would like to give a big shout out to James Taylor for joining us in part one of the episode. And please check out James and John and Mike on Extra Time later on this week. They've obviously done a fantastic job throughout the season and a huge end of the season in prospect in J2 and J3 as well. We'd like to thank all of our patrons for their ongoing support on Patreon. If you'd like to get involved, please visit patreon.com/jtalkpod. And patrons, stand by your inboxes because coming this week will be our first team-specific player of the season polls, starting from 6th placed Kashiwa down to 10th placed Nagoya. We will provide 3 or 4 candidates per club for you to consider. And we'll run through those 5 teams and give our thoughts on their players of the season in next week's episode. So look out for those patrons. And finally, listeners, we'd like to thank you for listening wherever you are. We'll be back to review the 5 games from Wednesday and the Emperor's Cup final in next week's episode. Speak to you next week. Bye for now.
The J-Talk Podcast. Yes, 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 yes.